nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
A date which will live in infamy.
You will be a minister of death, praying for war.
To speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
Did your parents have any children that live?
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Oh, the humanity.
That is right. That is a zombie ghost train bringing us in. Rain from the show right there. That is our walk-in music tonight. It's a zombie ghost train. You know, a little bit of Devil Child never hurt anything. Speaking of the devil, poor Todd, he's on the sidelines tonight. I know. It stinks. He hurt his back, so everyone say a little prayer for Mr. Todd Bates. You know, we're getting to that age. Okay, now I just made myself sound really freaking old. But that's all right. I am not flying alone tonight. I have the incomparable Eric Altman on loan from Beyond the Edge Radio. Hey, Eric, you there?
What's going on, brother?
Not much. How you doing, my good friend?
I am doing very well tonight and want to thank you very much for having me fill the big shoes of Todd. It's going to be some mighty big shoes to fill tonight, but I'm excited to be here.
Yes, they're almost like clown shoes.
That's what I've heard. Big floppy clown shoes.
Well, that's cool, man. That's cool. Well, as we talked about or I alluded to earlier, yeah, we got you from Beyond the Edge Radio, and that is its very own radio show. And what do you guys deal with on Beyond the Edge?
Yeah, we're alternative talk radio, kind of like Haunted Voices or Airstrike Radio is. We talk about pretty much everything from ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, the paranormal. Conspiracy theories, a little bit of politics thrown in there, current events, stuff like that. It's all good. We got a lot of great guests on the show, and we cover pretty much everything.
Very much a mixed bag.
Yeah, I would definitely call it a mixed bag. A mixed bag of what? I don't know. A flaming bag of something.
That humanity is desperately trying to stomp out.
Exactly. Put it on the Porsche, light it, and run like hell.
That's all you can do. That's all you can do is light it and pray it. Now, who is on the show with you?
Oh, my co-host on Beyond the Edge Radio is my good buddy, the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. We're on Sunday nights, 9 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern. And you can catch us on Z-Talk Radio, Jackalope Radio, and, of course, BeyondTheEdgeRadio.com.
And Planet Paranormal.
Oh, yeah, got to mention Planet Paranormal.
Yeah, that's right, because Airstrike Radio is now on Planet Paranormal.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Gotta love
yeah.
Bob Davis and
oh,
the folks
man.
Over there.
Bob Davis absolutely rocks it out, doesn't he? Oh, definitely. Now, just to reiterate for all the new people that are kind of piling in, they're like, oh, what the heck, what am I missing? Eric, when did you start Beyond the Edge Radio?
We started Beyond the Edge Radio back in October of 2007 over on the little, I guess, well-known radio network called Blog Talk Radio. And from there, we kind of jumped up to the Dark Plains Radio Network and then on to Z-Talk and Jackalope Radio and Planet Paranormal. And we're just growing by leaps and bounds.
Cool. Well, I've given you ample time to plug yourself.
Well, you know me, I love to plug away.
Nah, I'm just teasing you, bud. we you know, today has been kind of a funny day because did you hear the news? Did you hear the
news? About Tiger Woods?
Yeah, Tiger Woods at the sex clinic.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
Oh, my. Now, how would you like to be the paparazzi to grab that one?
I think that'd be worth its weight in gold to get a couple pictures of that, but you gotta love the disguise he was wearing. I mean, come on now.
There's nothing better than a really, really... Okay, wait a second. The guy's a millionaire how many times over, and yet he buys the cheapest disguise known to man.
It looked terrible.
I would be going to someone like maybe, you know, an FX guy in Hollywood and saying, hey, wanna go ahead and make me up so I don't look like Tiger Woods?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Michael Jackson used to do that. He used to dress like an old white guy when he went out into public.
Yeah.
And he actually had a special effects artist do the makeup for him. So why not do it, Tiger? Come on, get with the time.
Well, no kidding. No kidding. If you're, you know what? You've got big shoes to fill since, oh, gosh, poor Michael Jackson has left this world. But, you know, you're trying to, you know, pick up where you left off, Tiger. We understand that. It's okay. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to reach that level of freakiness.
He's almost there.
Almost. Almost, but he does not have Bubbles the Monkey. He does not
True.
Have the remains of the Elephant Man. And he does
True.
Not sleep in a hyperbaric chamber yet.
Give him time.
You think so?
I'm waiting for him to grow the Jerry Curl.
The Jerry Curl? No!
I'm waiting for him to start doing that and grabbing himself in the crotch and moonwalking across the ninth hole.
Or do you mean maybe the 1980s red leather jacket Michael Jackson? Now that is the Michael Jackson everyone knew and loved.
Yes, it is.
Or the Jackson 5, even better. Because I remember a time, bless his soul, when Michael Jackson was black.
Yes, he was. And that's when his music was really good.
It was really good. It was like ABC, 123, all those songs, they were killer.
Yeah, and he put out the Thriller album, and then after that, his career kind of just went downhill.
I think what happened, honestly, is much like Tiger Woods, I think they hit a wall in their career. You know, can you get any bigger than where you are now?
I think he kind of wanted to look like Diana Ross, and he just kind of wanted to press that level a little bit more.
Oh, not poor Diana. No. No. Yeah, poor Diana Ross. Is she still alive?
Yeah, she is, as a matter of fact.
She is? Wow.
Yeah, she's still alive. She didn't go to Michael's funeral, unfortunately. She said she just wanted to grieve in her own private way. But yeah, she's still alive and kicking.
Well, that's good to know, because you don't see her anywhere anymore. I mean, I guess for obvious reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Michael looks like her. She looks like Michael. You know, it was kind of hard for her to go out in public.
They flutter with Thriller aisle albums. Can you sign here? We thought you were dead. Well, maybe next week's guest can fill some gaps in for us about Michael Jackson. We have R. Gary Patterson coming on next week. And he is the world's foremost authority in rock and roll myths, legends, curses, the whole nine yards, man. It's going to be a great show.
It sounds like a great show. And I've heard R. Gary Patterson on a lot of other talk radio programs, and he's a very informative guest. And he might be able to fill us in a little bit about the YouTube video that was released when Michael passed away. There was some controversy around that.
Yes, CNN or whatever, it was on there. I remember seeing that. Because someone gave me the link. They said, oh, you got to check out this video. And I'm watching this guy strolling through the Never Neverland Ranch. Well, here comes a shadow person darting by. Now, do you think, though, that was doctored up?
Yeah, I don't think it's a legitimate piece of video footage, but you never know.
You know, well, truth be told, Eric, you're more of a Bigfoot guy than a ghost guy, aren't you?
Yeah.
And so would Bigfoot even say Michael's weird?
I think he would. In his own strange,
have to have subtitles under there.
Yeah.
It might him screaming, grunting, and yelling, you might be able to get something out of there, like Michael Jackson, you know, was weird, you know, or what have you. And we're not picking on poor Michael, really. We're really, in a roundabout way, picking on Tiger.
Yeah, we are.
You know, poor Tiger. Yeah, poor guy. You know what? Tiger Woods, okay, number one. The guy, it comes out, okay, now one mistress, okay, all right, you know what, maybe your wife will forgive you, okay, maybe if you beg hard enough, you buy our Kobe ring. When I say Kobe, I mean like a Kobe Bryant ring, I mean that giant rock he bought his wife after he kind of strayed. Mm-hmm. Maybe if he would have bought our Kobe ring and said, oh, honey, never do it again, but 12 of them? Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. She said, you know what, I get half of what you are anyway, so catch you later.
Reminds me of that Steve Miller song, Go On, Take the Money and Run.
In this case, run to the clinic.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, grabbing his thing to run. But yeah, here's the thing that gets me about the Tiger Woods thing. As he crashes his SUV, okay? Now, this is what I think really happened, and bear in mind, this is only my opinion. It does not reflect you or Haunted Voices or any of the affiliates out there. It does not reflect anybody but me. I think this is what happened that morning. Tiger got home. His wife was mad. Where the heck have you been? Why do you smell like cheap perfume? So he knew he was in trouble, so he ran out to the Escalade. Got in the Escalade, hit the gas, took off as fast as he could. Lost control because, bear in mind, she was chasing him with a golf club. He lost control, as she's screaming, mind you, like a banshee on crack. Chasing him down the driveway, he crashes into the tree and whatever else he hit. I think he hit a fire hydrant. Now, this is the story she gave. Now, whether you believe it or not, she claims that she pulled Tiger Woods out of the vehicle from the driver's seat all the way back to the SUV. Why didn't you just open up the driver's side door? Is my question.
I think she wanted to beat him down with a club.
I think what happened was she straight up, not just my opinion, beat Tiger Woods to a pulp, in my opinion.
I would agree with that.
And God bless her for doing it. Because that's the first time Tiger's been beaten in about 10 years.
Too many holes in one, my friend. Too many holes in one.
That's right. But, I mean, it's been a weird week versus Tiger Woods. Woods is over there getting his treatment. And we really do hope that Tiger does make it through okay. He gets back where he belongs, and that's on the golf course. You know, and stay away from Hugh Hefner at all costs, Tiger. He was a nice guy. Don't go to the Playboy Mansion. That's nothing but trouble for you. That is like an alcoholic going to the Miller Tap Room.
Yes, it is.
Eric is like, oh my God, I can't believe he's saying these things. Oh my God.
My advice to Tiger is to keep your putter on your own green.
Ooh.
That would be my advice to Tiger.
Yeah. Well, any other good news that you've heard this week that you know?
No, not really. It's been kind of a crazy week here for me, just, you know, with my 9-to-5 job and working on Beyond the Edge Radio, kind of a quiet week, you know, after the holidays settling down and stuff. And the weather actually improved here in Pennsylvania, so I'm excited about that. We've actually got a week of above freezing temperatures, and about 90% of the snow and ice that we had finally melted. But I understand you guys still have that nasty weather out there.
Oh, man, we're going to be getting pummeled this weekend by a big one coming in. And they're talking about probably like 6 to 8 inches of wet, heavy snow. I mean, not just the fluffy stuff. This is the stuff that if you shovel it up, it weighs 12 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Good cardiac arrest.
Oh, yeah. They'll give you cardio right there. But did you see, though, you know, weather notwithstanding, did you see that Massachusetts has a new senator?
Yes, I did. And what a shocker that was, huh?
Yeah. I was really surprised. I was really surprised that he got in. Because Massachusetts, and you live actually pretty close to that area, don't you? You're kind of in Pennsylvania.
It's 15 hours away. Yeah, I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, as the crow flies, it's really not that far. Now, would you say where you live is very, liberal, for a really good term?
We live in a pretty liberal state. The Philadelphia area and over here in Pittsburgh have always been a very liberal, democratic state. Getting to the central part of the state, it's fairly conservative, moderate conservative. But, overall, Pennsylvania's always been a very liberal state.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's nothing really wrong with that, you know? I mean, it has its place, don't get me wrong. But you know, Scott Brown making it in the U.S. Senate over there in Beantown or Bean area, because it's the whole state, that's a shocker, though.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you got the Kennedy family up there that's predominant for, what, 37 years?
Yeah.
And then for a Republican to come in and take that seat was pretty shocking. We'll have to wait and see.
Definitely shocking. Ugh, you know. The thing of it is, no, I'm reading this story here quickly about John Edwards, and that's even kind of scary on its own. You know, what lengths he was willing to do. Now, have you been following that story at all?
Actually, I haven't. I heard something about he came out and admitted that he has a child.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, he did. I don't want to leave you hanging, but yeah, he did. He did. And he also had a plan to cover it up. Apparently, allegedly, I want to throw allegedly in there, had a plan to cover it up.
I missed that story. I just saw the headline today when I was jumping on the internet that he admitted he has a love child.
Well, yeah, the bombshell hit. Okay, he says, hey, guess what? I got a kid floating around out there. When it failed, now allegedly, he tried to get one of his staff members to take the bullet for him. Say, I'm the father of the child. And the plan was, now this is all hearsay. It was on the 10 o'clock news, you know, last night, that he was trying to get this person to grab a dirty diaper from this baby for a quick DNA test so they could modify the results.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To show that to make it seem like that the aide was doing more than just aiding him. He was aiding him, all right. You know, that's what they want to show. But then the staff member, by all rights, I got to give him kudos for this, stood up and he said, wait a second here. I'm a married man, all right, number one. And I don't want to be stuck with this kid. It's your problem, not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is understandable. The guy's a young guy. Why would you want to be saddled with someone else's kid? You know, because Edward says, well, I'll take care of you the rest of your life if you do this for me. Well, rest of your life is a very long time.
It is, and how long will you remain a senator?
Mm-mm, exactly. Absolutely.
Especially after this came out.
No kidding. I mean, this is pretty damning. Yeah, it's pretty damning. But, you know, folks, if you want to call us tonight, see, tonight, our guest is not politics, even though I'd love it to be tonight because of all the breaking stuff, and we'll get to that later. Our great guest tonight is John Kachuba. John Kachuba is he's a certified, licensed, or certified, I guess certified would be better, right, Eric? There is no licensed ghost hunter.
Well, not that I'm aware of, no. Okay, at least not yet. Give it time.
Yeah, certified. Certified ghost hunter, that's right. He is certified by the great Patty Starr down there in Kentucky. Isn't that cool, man? That's totally rocking.
That's awesome.
And he wrote the book Ghost Hunters, you know, among other books. That's just not his only book. He's done really a lot of literary work. He's taught everything from college to you name it. And he's going to be on the show tonight. And he's like having the Encyclopedia Britannica of ghosts on the show with us. You know, come on, any guy that can write a book called Ghost Hunters has got to know something about the field.
Oh, most definitely. And it should be an exciting show tonight, talking about ghosts and hunting ghosts. And I'm pumped, man. I love the subject of ghosts.
That's right. And tonight's call-in numbers, as always, is the toll-free is 877-216-9987. Or if you're outside the U.S., it's 618-421-4280. Or you can even call my own personal number, which we may make that into a hotline later on for if you've seen a ghost, which is 218-305-4676. 218-305-4676. That is if you've seen a ghost hotline. That's right. We'd love to hear how you've seen a ghost or if you're just afraid of ghosts. See, now, personally, I'm more afraid of aliens than I am ghosts.
The whole anal probing thing?
That is it right there, man. You know what? They're going to take you to Mars. You're never going to see your wife again. I mean, you're never going to be able to watch an NFL game. Speaking of which, go Vikings. You know, that's the thing. I get more scared of thinking of a giant mothership coming down to grab me and take me to somewhere God knows where and, yeah, get heinous with the anus, if you know what I mean.
Just make sure they have plenty of KY lube.
No, my luck, I get the nasty ones that don't like humans. We're going to show him what this is all about. Watch this. Look at this. Watch, kids. Wait till you hear the pop. But that's a whole nother story right there. We are getting way off track. Actually, I'm getting way off track. Poor Eric is shaking his head, blushing like a virgin right now. Absolutely. If we could see his camera, he would be like, oh, my God, what did I sign up for? But that being said, we have to jet off the break. And we've come back. John Kachuba, that's right, author of Ghost Hunter, is up next. We'll be right back after this. Enjoy the music during this break. It's definitely kick butt.
From the imagination of author Stephen Wren, radio producer for Haunted Voices Radio, and the director of Tennessee Paranormal, a new fiction series based on pirates and the paranormal, Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of the Siren. According to a recent review by ParanormalNews.com, there are misty visitors, ghost pirates, orbs of light, astral projection, secret societies, spiritualistic entities, missions of the human soul, which make it a truly enjoyable read. Now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, Tower Books, and more. Or visit Jeremiah on the web at jeremiahbloom.com or the author, Stephen Wren, at stephenwren.com. Jeremiah Balloon, an amulet of Osiris.
Now curse this face through me. Let me to love what kills me. To top it off, you made him home to me. He flies intoxicate me. Drunken and barely breathing. Can't cry out loud, cause he can't know.
Since 1948, Fate Magazine has delivered a one-of-a-kind reading experience, covering everything from psychics, UFOs, paranormal investigations, and more. For more information, visit FateMag.com or call 1-800-728-2730. That's 1-800-728-2730. Fate Magazine, true reports of the strange and unknown.
You're listening to your home of stimulating talk radio. Airstrike Radio. And we are back. That's right. Airstrike Radio coming right back at you. Almost like an infection. I'm not quite sure how stimulating we are, but apparently that young lady thinks that we're very stimulating. We're here tonight with John Kachuba. John is a world-renowned author. He's the quintessential ghost hunter. That's right. He is a certified ghost hunter. And that is something, well, that's an honor on its own. But John also is a teacher. He taught many different places. Most primarily, he did a lot of, well, he molded the next generation, or should I say warped, huh, John? Huh? Warped the next generation of writers. No, very cool guy, very smart man with us, John Kachuba.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, John, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. I do warp my students.
Do you really? Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people accuse me of warping their minds. So I know if I'm warping their minds and you're a teacher, which takes it to that next degree of warping, mm-hmm. You must have done some damage.
It's academic warping, they call it. Yeah. So yeah. Higher level, but it's the same thing.
There you go. You have to tell them. Now, what was it like being a teacher, though? I often ask, was it tough being a teacher in college?
No, level? I enjoy it. I still teach, but not so much in a classroom setting anymore because I was formerly teaching at Ohio University mm-hmm. in Athens, Ohio, and I moved to Cincinnati. So now I'm teaching more in their correspondence school. But I do from time to time teach classes like at University of Cincinnati now and then. I mean, it's fun. I enjoy doing it. It's a break from everything else that I do, and it's just fun being with people younger than me and warping their minds.
Well,
that's great.
That's the most important part is the mind warping.
It really is.
It is.
You know, I fear. They learned something maybe by that. I don't know.
Well, I was asked the other day to write an article for a magazine. My good partner, my normal partner in crime, God bless him, hurt his back, so he's not with us tonight. And that's Todd Bates, great radio host. But we were asked to write an article, and I quickly found out, John, I can barely write my own name. I mean, you think it's easy. You really do. When you read something, you read a book, and you sit down and you go to write, It's far more difficult than it looks.
Well, it depends. I mean, it's like everything else. You know, I bang around on a guitar, but I don't play it well. I'm always in awe of people that, you know, can do something like that and make it look easy. I think, how do they do that, you know? but there are people that just don't want to write, can't write, and probably shouldn't write, and there's others that really like to do it, like me.
There you go. Enough said. Very, very well put.
I fit into the probably shouldn't write crowd.
Me too, my friend. Me too. Oh, believe me. Yeah, but that's for another show on its own. So what do you got new? Before we came on, I want to make sure to hit this point right away. You got some new stuff for brewing.
Yeah, there's a couple things going on. You know, my first two ghost books were Ghost Hunting Ohio and Ghost Hunting Illinois. They were state books. And based on that, Clarice Press decided to do a national rollout called America's Haunted Road Trip. And what we're doing is we're having writers from various states who are well-known in the field write about their particular state. And all these books are basically books about places that are open to the public, so the audience can go, the readers can go and visit these places. The writers all have to go to all the places themselves personally, so you get a first-hand account from, you know, from their point of view. And right now we've got, well, besides my book on Ohio and Illinois, we have books on Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia. This year we're going to have, we just released Texas. And in the fall, we'll have Kentucky, Southern California, New York City, and Florida. So I guess we'll have roughly about 10 books, and each one written by a different person, except for me, I've written two. And we have some good name writers on this, like Rosemary Ellen Guiley, wrote our book for Pennsylvania. Patty Starr wrote our Kentucky book. April Slaughter, who's big in Texas, wrote the Texas book. Laura Laddick,
everything's
the Ghost Hunters.
Everything's big in Texas, John. Everything's big in Texas anyway. So
everything's big in Texas. Yeah. The Ghost Hunters.
I hate to bust in there. I had to get that bad.
Everything is. I lived there for a while, and the ghosts are enormous.
Enormous. They're like Godzilla coming down.
You ought to see the EMS meters we haul in the back of the truck.
Gosh.
I tell you.
I actually have a copy of the Pennsylvania book that Rosemary wrote, and it's an excellent book. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad you like it. Yeah, and the whole idea behind this, like I said, it's a little bit different. There are certainly state books and regional books by many writers and many publishers, but the difference with these books is that all the writers have to go to the places, so they're all investigating them for themselves personally. They're not just pulling stuff off the Internet or whatever and putting it together in a book. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, all the places are open to the public, and we actually encourage people to go to these places if they're interested and, check them out for themselves and see what they find. So we're calling the whole series sort of a paranormal travel book series, because it really is. It's paranormal travel, and eventually we'll have books, across the entire country. We already have them, as I mentioned, kind of highlighting different areas. So almost any place in the country you could pick up a Ghost Hunting, America's Haunted Road Trip book, that if it doesn't deal with your state, it probably deals with the state right next door, So, and then along with that, in addition to the fact that I'm editing all these books, and I'm actually recruiting the writers, working with each writer as they write their book, making sure everything is the way we'd like to see it, and then I'm also working on a second Ohio book that'll come out actually probably next year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because my first one came out in 2004, and people over the last 6 years have been telling me, "Did you go to this place? Did you go to this place?" And I said, "No, I only live in the state of Ohio, and I missed half of it." So there's so much going on here that we're doing a second book in this state.
No, I am constantly traveling for you people. That's right. If you tell me a state, I'm on the road right away. No, a great little question comes in from one of our chat rooms. Nellie asks, "Do your students get extra credit if they're listening tonight?"
Well, they might.
Yeah, and they get even more if they call in, right?
If they call in, right.
That's right. And those call-in numbers are toll-free, 877-216-9987. That's if you're inside the great, United States. Outside the United States, call 618-421, I'm sorry, I can't read my own writing tonight. 4280, that's right, I got cheat sheets like crazy, good memory, but short, and so I had to write down those numbers quick before the show. Normally I have them memorized, but you guys ever run into one of those, I've heard them be called, pardon the expression, mind farts, brain farts, where you just forget it. It's just not there when you call upon it.
Every day.
Or is that called
Alzheimer's?
That's
a normal thing with me.
Is that the early onset of Alzheimer's? Gosh, I sure hope it's not.
I think you suffer from some timers.
Yes. Some are here, some are there. That's right. Sometimes. Gosh. But getting back to what's important here, and that's John. John, that's a great, great series of books. It sounds like it's going to totally rock. And is the ultimate goal to have one from every state?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's some states that we might have to combine. We get to some of the western states where the population is very low, Wyoming, Montana. We might have to do maybe one book that has maybe two or three of the upper west states or something like that. But, eventually there'll be one for pretty much every state is what we're hoping.
Well, yeah, because South Dakota's three guys and the sheep. I mean,
well,
come on.
Right.
Sorry, South Dakota. I know. I just offended every... Yes, I hear a mass clicking of radios going off
that
right
was
now.
Bad.
Yeah, that was really, really mean. It is. I traveled that state one time, and I got to say, there is not a ton of residents there, so it would be tough to get a book like that for a state like that, so that makes total sense.
Right. Well, and actually, it makes sense that we went to all the heavily populated states first. So I said, we're doing California, Southern California this year, Northern California next year. We already have Texas in. We have places like New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, some heavy states. Florida will be in this fall. It'll be out in the stores. So, we're doing the more populated areas.
Hey, it makes sense. How many books will be dedicated to California?
Well, we're going to do two. We're dividing the state up in half.
Okay.
And actually the same writer, Tamara Thorne, is going to do both Southern and Northern California. She's really got a great following because she has written, I don't know, maybe 12 or 13 horror novels, ghost novels, that are published by a major publisher. So she's got a real good name out there, so people already know her, and she's doing a great job on the book. So we're looking forward to those coming out.
With a state like California, though, you're right. You almost have to break it up in two volumes. I mean, it's so dense, so big. The book would weigh 12 pounds and you're done.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Texas book.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. People say, well, what is this, the Bible?
And you know what happens with all these books? I mean, even in Ohio, a great example, the fact that I'm doing a second book in Ohio. Ohio does not have the population of California, but what you find is that, you know, there are just so many places in almost any state, even, I would bet, even South Dakota. You know, you find so many places that you end up having to pick the best for the book because there's other places that you say, oh, it's a good story, but this one's even better. We can only put in so many stories in a book. We do about maybe 24 to 30 or so stories in every book, locations in every book. And, yeah, I mean, I end up weeding them out and saying, well, this one's good, but this one's even better. You know, so you end up throwing them away because you can't, there's so many. So there's no end to locations, which is a nice thing for any one of the writers doing our books.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We have our first caller tonight. Hi, Phil. How you doing? Are you there, Phil? Going once, going twice. Don't make me hang up, Phil. Don't make me hang up. Unmute your microphone if you have one. Well, hopefully, Phil, you'll call back in. That's always fun when that happens. But poor Phil. Phil, you didn't make it on the show. But if you want to make it on the show, it's 877-216-9987. That's the toll-free line. Outside the United States, 618-241-4280, and I nailed it perfect that time, guys. Yay! If I had a little applause thing, I'd hit it because, my gosh, can't believe I did that. But one thing when I was reading your bio, I was reading it, and you are a certified ghost hunter.
That's right.
How did you come to become a certified ghost hunter? Because it's kind of a quasi-science. It's really a fringe science.
Well, what happened was, in 2007, I published a book. A book of mine was published by New Page Books called Ghost Hunters, and has a real long subtitle, On the Trail of Mediums, Dowsers, Spirit Seekers, and Other Investigators of America's Paranormal World. Long title. But in one of those chapters, I have a title called License and Registration, Please. And what it's about becoming a certified ghost hunter. And what happened was I was at a conference someplace giving a talk many years ago when I first started writing my books. And I met somebody at the conference, and we were talking, and he gave me his business card. And on it, it said, I think certified ghost hunter or certified ghost investigator, something like that. But the word certified was there.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at him, you know, quizzically, like, certified? How? What does that even mean? How do you get certified? Who does a certification? What's that all about? So I did some research, and I found online that there were many people across the country who are offering certificates, and they have different titles. You know, they call certified paranormal investigator, certified paranormal research, certified ghost hunter. Didn't matter what they called it. They were all about the same thing, which was that they would train you in the techniques of using various equipment that, you know, ghost hunters would use. They would train you in methods, how to conduct an investigation, how to interview people. It ranged from one individual to another as to what they would train you on. And also the price range from maybe $30 to something you can do online to maybe a couple $100, which involved actually going to a location, you know, a couple nights a week, maybe a couple weeks, doing field work, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was intrigued by this. I wanted to know what it was about. So for my book, Ghost Hunters, I checked all these places, and I picked one myself to enroll in it to see what it was like. And I enrolled in Patty Starr's course in Kentucky. Patty has Ghost Hunters International, GHI. And she
sounds like
courses.
A show name to me. GHI.
It's what?
It sounds like a show name to me.
Ghost Hunters International. I know it should be. It should be on the Discovery Channel. Right? Actually, it's funny because, they do have that, don't they?
Yeah, I think Sci-Fi has that, don't they?
And that's the name for a group. I'll be darned.
Yeah,
she's been
it's
around
a whole
for
show.
A long, long time.
Yeah, she has. Patty Starr is one of the, well, I don't want to say the oldest because she's still a very young lady, but she's one of the more experienced paranormal investigators out there. With that being said, we got to hurry up and run to our first break. Oh, wow, blowing my mind, John. You're always an awesome interview. More with John Kochubel when we come back after this.
Looking for professional meters for your next investigation? Look no further than Alpha Lab Scientific Instruments, makers of AC and DC milligauss meters, earth magnetometers, and the widely used Tri-Field Natural EM meter. This meter actually detects changes in extremely weak static electric and magnetic fields, and signals with both a tone and movement of a needle-type gauge if either the electric or magnetic field changes from previous levels. A must-have for any paranormal researcher. For all your field meter needs, visit Alpha Lab Scientific Instruments at trifield.com. TRIfield.com. Do you want to hear Haunted Voices radio programming on Sirius Satellite Radio? If so, let your voice be heard. Just go to Sirius.com/customer care, fill out the contact form, and let them know that you would like to hear Haunted Voices Radio on Sirius. No radio? No problem. With Sirius, you can enjoy over 65 channels of news, comedy, sports, and talk using just your computer and internet access. If you're a Haunted Voices Radio fan, speak up and ask Sirius to add us to their program. And as always, thanks for your support.
To the Burger Barn.
No, yeah, I still understand you. Let's try it again.
Okay. Hello. Welcome to the Burger Barn.
Much better.
This now, man is learning how to become a professional intercom announcer. Yes, there are hundreds of immediate openings for annoying and inarticulate people just like you. And after just 6 short weeks at the School of Intercom Announcing, you too will be ready to frustrate thousands. We'll teach you how to blow into a microphone, how to obscure key words in important announcements.
This is the final boarding call for singing, bottle score, bottle flying, and Google City.
With your PA degree from SIA, you'll be on your way to low-pay jobs in discount stores, malls, airports, even restaurants. The School of Intercom Announcing. Just dial 1-800-245-6650 today.
Help keep internet radio legal, affordable, and independent with LoudCity.com. Discover great music with over 500 channels to choose from, or become a DJ and stream your own music. For more information, visit LoudCity.com today.
What do you guys think of Airstrike Radio?
It's only one I listen to.
I just like everything about it. It's just really funny because, I mean, I like to stay up with current events, but at the same time, I also like to laugh, so it's the best of both worlds.
Simple fact of the matter, they're, for one, down home, they like to go about doing community stuff, and then, of course, just the wildness that they have in there.
Definitely turned on.
Basically, they just do and say whatever they want.
They always are coming up with new stuff, new twists.
Thank you for your feedback. Remember to keep listening right here on Airstrike Radio Online as well as HVRNC.com. That's the Haunted Voices Radio Network.
And welcome back to the show. My name's Eric Allman. You're listening to Airstrike Radio. Thanks for joining us here tonight, along with my good buddy and pal, Joel Sturgis. How you doing, Joel?
Not too bad, man. How you doing? Having fun?
I'm doing fantastic.
Cool. You having a good time, though. That's all that matters.
I'm having
a blast,
man.
Sweet. That's right. And well, you have a ton of great questions for John, so I'm going to give you the floor, man.
Yeah, before I get to those questions, let's give out the toll-free number if anybody wants to call in tonight. The toll-free number is 877-216-9987. Again, that number is 877-216-9987. If you're outside the U.S., call us at 618-421-4280. Again, 618-421-4280. And, John, I got a question for you, my friend. Being that you're from the Athens, Ohio area, I've heard that Athens itself is its own little haunted paradise.
It is. It is indeed. In my Ghost Hunting Ohio book, I have an entire chapter about Athens, Athens County, the city of Athens for the most part. And in Ghost Hunters, my 2007 book, I have an entire chapter about an investigation that was done at the Athens Mental Asylum. Actually, that's even the cover of my Ghost Hunting Ohio book, is a photo of this old mental asylum in Athens. Athens has had a long, long history, and there's a lot of reasons for it, or I should say a lot of supposed reasons as to why there's so much paranormal activity going on there. One is that Athens is located in an area where there's sort of, they believe, a lot of, you know, ley lines that have sort of come in and basically cross through and intersect in that area. And so people think that it might be a type of vortex, like a paranormal vortex. And it has a history, a long history, of Native Americans using that area for, let's say, spiritual, religious purposes more than settlement. They wouldn't settle in the area, and they wouldn't hunt there. They would come to it for, you know, for various, I don't want to say vision quests, but, you know, various kinds of spiritual practices.
Are you saying,
use that area.
Are you saying they got high there?
It's what?
Were you saying they did the dope there? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, that's what they did. They smoked no.
Remember kids?
I don't think so. I mean,
remember
kids? They do now. That's the college students you're talking about at Ohio University. That's a whole different group.
Remember
there,
kids. But, dope is for dopes.
But, you know, one thing about Athens was that in the mid-19th century, when the spiritualist movement was really growing and was very popular in this country, one of the most famous tabernacles, as they called it, was located in Athens on a hill called Mount Nebo. And it was the Coons family that ran this thing, and they would do seances where they would do automatic writing. You'd have spirit hands, you know, floating around. You'd hear voices. Musical instruments would float through the air, and they would play, you know, bugles would sound, and drums would bang, and all that kind of stuff. And that place was so famous that people would come from all around the world to attend seances there. And that was all in Athens. So there's a long, long history as to, you know, what was going on there. There's obviously some, just call it paranormal energy, if you will, in that area that draws people and that creates events there.
Awesome. We got a phone call, John. We got someone calling in from the 248 area code tonight. Welcome to Airstrike Radio. You got a question for John?
Yeah, it's Phil.
Hey, Phil Billy, how you doing, bud?
Oh, pretty good. The Skype messed me up.
It did, didn't it? I saw you were trying to. Yeah, you're using your good old Skype to call in there. And what happened? You forgot to unmute, because I do that all the time.
Oh, okay. I'm a rookie.
I am too. I do it all the time.
Yeah, when we do the shows and stuff, I depend on you and Todd to get me through. That's the problem.
It's all good.
Anyway, I had a question for John, since he's in Ohio. Has he ever heard of the Spitzer House? It's in Medina. Yeah, it's in Medina, Ohio.
You know, that sounds familiar. I wrote about two places in Medina, in the city, and Medina is a fairly small place. I thought, is this I think it's a bed and breakfast, isn't it? Or it used to be?
Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's kind of painted a purplish color.
Yeah. I've seen it.
And they have the lights on at night. It almost looks like a Disney-type thing or something. I wondered if you'd ever heard of it, because, yeah, my wife and I have been there twice, and the people that own it are super great. And they set it up for us to go on nights when there was nobody else there, so my wife and I would have the whole place to ourselves. That place is one of the few places I will say I think it's active.
Hmm.
And I just wondered if you'd ever heard of it, because
I don't know what's going on there, Phil, but I had heard the name, and people have recommended it to me in the past. So I think it's a place that I might want to consider for the new book. Like I said, right down the, I'm sure it's on the same street, is the Medina, what do they call it, Medina Steakhouse or something like that. And I wrote about that
right,
place.
Yeah,
in the town square is the cafe there. Yeah, I know where it is, and I have not been there yet, but it sounds like a place that I should probably check into.
Yeah, the owners are very nice. It's a husband and wife who own it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I spent, the first night we were there, a very uncomfortable night.
Really?
Because
buy a bed.
It was active. Yeah, it was active. I stood at the top of this round stairway, and I listened to somebody coming up the stairs. And they got halfway up, and they have a motion sensing light that comes on halfway up the stairs. If somebody's, that light came on, and when it did, the footsteps stopped. Well, I stood there, and I didn't hear anything else. I was thinking it was one of the owners coming up for something. And I looked down through, because the stairs is kind of circular. There was nobody there. I mean, this place was just weird. Weird noises all night. This is one of the few places I will say I think it is active. I think there's something there.
It's pretty small, too, isn't it? It's not a very large place.
Yeah. All the bedrooms are on the second floor, and there's only like four.
Yeah.
Wow.
But
That's nasty. Not nasty in a bad way, but I mean, to be that haunted. I mean, see, I don't mind a haunted place, but... Yeah. I mean, when you get those heebie-jeebies like you're talking about, Phil, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Where you almost feel that unsettling feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
That was the thing when I was standing there, because there's the upstairs, there's a stairway, a circular type, well, a square type mm-hmm. stairways that goes up in the front. And then in the back, there's a stairway that goes straight down. And it goes into the kitchen, which is in the back of the house where the owners live. And so I just set a video camera up at the front of the stairs to go down that hallway, because there's stories of an apparition of a woman that's up there that I won't get into the whole long story, but it might have been a daughter of the original owner and all this. And I went out to get the video camera, and I was standing there looking through the video camera and thinking, I hope we caught something. That's when I heard the footsteps coming up the stairs. And then when there was nothing there. And that was one of those things where, yeah, you get like electricity. You feel like a little jolt of electricity and everything, because I felt like somebody is standing on those stairs looking up at me. It was just creepy.
Wow. Have you been back since that one time?
Well, he saw you, Phil. That's why he looked at you like you're creepy.
That's the thing, you know. It was like I felt like there's somebody standing there looking at me. I don't see anybody, but I feel like there's somebody.
He says there's that creepy.
And you
feeling.
Get that little buzz in you, like electricity. It was, but that's a place. Yeah, if you want to write about, that's one place I would recommend you check out.
Yeah, I will, because like I said, you sort of jolted my memory. I mean, people had to tell me about that in the past. And I know I've seen the building and everything else, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but I definitely will. I think it sounds great.
Cool. Well, Phil, hey, man, thank you so much for calling in. Sorry about not being able to take your first call, but I'm really glad you were able to get
okay.
through.
Okay.
Hey, man, you take
care. I'll get this Skype thing worked out.
Oh, yeah. Give me a jingle if you need help, too. I'll help you out. All right, you have a good one there, Phil.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, well, there's so many times where you get that feeling. Eric, have you ever had that feeling in a place? That unsettling, don't know kind of thing going on? You know, the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, exactly. And especially in such a small place like Phil was talking about, man, you feel all that confinement, you know, closing in around you, and you can't really, you move to one room to another room, and it just follows you. I know what you mean.
Crazy stuff right there. Oh, man, oh, man. But no, Phil, see now, when people come up with a story and they say, well, it creeped me out, made me feel weird in this place. See, I don't mind a haunted location. That doesn't bother me. But when it's that type of haunted location where it makes you feel truly unwelcomed, is always the one that kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
You know, but now, before we go to break, a comment was coming in, or kind of a question comment. We recently had an exorcist on the show. His name is Father Jack Ashcraft. Do you believe that paranormal activity could be spurred on, or you know, the nasties, as they called it, which I do agree, man, you don't want the nasties around, let me tell you that much right now. But the nasties, do you believe that that can be brought on because of drug use?
Well, my feeling is that no matter how you were in life is how you're going to be afterwards. In other words, if you were a nice, decent, honest person, kind, loving, straight arrow, all that kind of stuff, if you end up as a ghost, and I don't think everybody does, but if you did, I think that's the kind of ghost you're going to be. You can be Casper, you know? But I think, on the other hand, that if you were somebody that was, you know, not necessarily a criminal, but a bad person, kind of a nasty person. And I would say somebody that had a drug habit, I'm not saying they're bad or nasty necessarily, but you're certainly doing stuff to your brain that is not good for you. I think that you might end up, if you do become a ghost, you might end up being that kind of a person, that kind of a ghost, still sort of negative energy, let's call it. And so, could it be caused by drug use? Yeah, possibly. It could be caused by a lot of other things in your life, too, though, besides that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just look at it very simply. However you are in life is how you would be if we met you later on. Why would you change? You know, what would suddenly magically happen that you'd be a different kind of person?
True, true. A lot of people say that your personality carries with you.
I would think.
You know, just like what you were saying. I bet you Jeff Dahmer's ghost is not a cuddly one.
I wouldn't want to meet it, no.
No, I wouldn't want to be running around with a can of barbecue sauce saying, hey, Jeff,
exactly.
No. Oh, yeah, no, I mean, that's just a horrible joke. I'm full of horrible jokes saying, all right, aren't I, Eric?
You're just a mile a minute, my friend.
There you go, yeah, well, that's the problem. A mile a minute, but we're having a great time. Now, getting back really quickly to the certification, I know we kind of we touched on it a little bit. You went to Patty Starr School. Do you believe that individual to do this line of work that you're doing has to be certified, or do you feel that that is something that's truly just optional?
Yeah, I don't believe at all that you need to be certified. And the other, you know, sort of the funny part of that is there is no organization, as we all know, there is no sort of umbrella group that says, okay, here's a certification. Like when you pass, medical boards to get licensed in the state of Ohio to be a medical doctor, let's say, there isn't anything like that. There is no arbitrary group that says, yes, you're qualified, and you're not. So when you get a certification like that, I mean, I don't put any real importance in it. But what I do think is good about those things is, at least for me, in going to Patty's class, is that you learn. It's the same thing as going to school. Let's say that you like painting and you want to be a better painter, and you see that in your community some person is offering art classes for $100. You say, hey, I want to be a better painter. So you go take those hundred, you know, that class, you pay them $100, and you get something out of it, and you say, hey, okay, now I feel like I learned more, I'm a better painter. Mm-hmm. That's all this is. You know, I felt that going to that course that I wanted to learn more. I did learn more. To me, it was worth the money. I mean, somebody else might say, well, you know, I don't want to pay that or something. Say, fine, you don't have to. And certainly you can learn all this on your own, too. I mean, just by practicing and hanging out with people that know the information, reading, studying, you know, you can do it on your own. There is no certification that is necessary, you know, for this. So I don't make a big deal about it and say, ooh, I'm certified.
Yeah,
you're not.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I've heard people make a big deal.
I have too, and I don't understand why.
Wow, well, why, man? I could take the same course you did. You know,
exactly.
There's no like really hard prerequisite to getting that college, guys. Anybody can really take it if they have the drive to do so. But that's the key word, the drive to do so. you know, to stick to it, to really want to learn. And that's on that note, though, we're going to hurry up and get to our Fox News. But all you people listening out there that are confused which chat room to go to, we have multiple. Go to the www.airstrikeonline.com one or the hvrnc.com one. It doesn't matter. Same great show, same great fun. We'll be right back after this.
The imagination of author Stephen Wren, radio producer for Haunted Voices Radio, and the director of Tennessee Paranormal, a new fiction series based on pirates and the paranormal, Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of the Siren. According to a recent review by ParanormalNews.com, there are misty visitors, ghost pirates, orbs of light, astral projection, secret societies, spiritualistic entities, missions of the human soul, which make it a truly enjoyable read. Now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, Tower Books, and more. Or visit Jeremiah on the web at jeremiahbloom.com or the author Stephen Wren at stephenwren.com. Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of Osiris.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Brady. The dust still settling for Democrats on Capitol Hill.
I'm just coming to give a courtesy call and meet some of the folks from the delegation.
And while the new Republican senator-elect from Massachusetts, Scott Brown, was making the rounds, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing there is no easy way out on health care reform.
I don't see the votes for it at this time.
Ruling out the House passing the Senate's version as is, which would have avoided another vote in the Senate, where Democrats no longer have a filibuster-proof majority once Brown is seated. A jury's just been seated for the trial of an admitted abortion doctor killer in Kansas. Scott Roeder, charged with first-degree murder, he has said he opened fire on Dr. George Tiller at a Wichita church because it was necessary to save unborn children. The judge has decided to allow testimony on Roeder's beliefs, which could ultimately mean allowing the jury to consider a lesser charge for conviction. For the second time in recent months, Toyota announces a big recall, more than 2 million vehicles this time. Fox News Radio's Jessica Rosenthal live with more.
Lisa, models affected include Camrys, Corollas, Avalons, Matrixes, Highlanders, Sequoias, and Tundras. The problem?
They may not feel something, but they might notice that the accelerator pedal is a little slow to return to the idle position.
Brian Lyons with Toyota says if people notice that in their cars, they should call a dealer ASAP. But he says they're still investigating and will eventually send out letters to folks who own Toyotas with details of the recall. A few months ago, Toyota had a different recall because accelerators were getting stuck on floor mats, Lisa.
Thanks, Jessica. Fans of two cable favorites are about to get their channels back. Cablevision and Scripps Networks announcing they've settled their fee fight, and that'll put Food Network and HGTV back on the air in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. And Air America officially dark, the liberal radio network, in today's announcement saying it'll soon file for Chapter 7 bankruptcy as well to wind down the business. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
You're in the Fox Light.
The best of music's best lead this week's Fox Light Music Release Roundup. The 2010 Grammy nominees album collects 20 nominated tracks, including Lady Gaga, Green Day, Rascal Flatts, U2, and the Zac Brown Band. Transference is the latest from Spoon, their first self-produced effort, and the influences reach far and wide from Bill Withers to The Police. The soundtrack to the Jeff Bridges film Crazy Heart collects 16 country-cured tracks by Buck Owens, George Jones, Waylon Jennings, and Bridges himself. My Dinosaur Life is the Mark Hoppus-produced fourth album from Punk Poppers' Motion City soundtrack. Album number 8 from The Eels is titled End Times and chronicles divorce against the backdrop of a world losing its integrity. And check out the Fox Light blog at foxnewsradio.com or the free Fox Light podcast at foxnewstalk.com for even more. In New York, Rob Moorer, Fox News Talk.
The Fox Light.
Keep listening for more focus from the Fox Light on Fox News Talk.
President Obama wants new limits on banks.
We have to enact common sense reforms that will protect
American taxpayers and the American economy.
An effort to rein in risk-taking with customers' money and avoid the potential for another financial collapse. Wall Street not on board. The Dow down 213 points. An effort to turn bank bailout funds into stimulus spending survives a Senate challenge.
Although it had wide support, a Republican amendment to prevent using repaid and unspent TARP bank bailout funds as stimulus money died in the Senate. It fell 7 votes short of crossing a 60-vote threshold to pass. South Dakota Senator John Thune says it's time to pay down the debt.
We can save the American taxpayer $320 billion by not spending this amount of money right here.
Connecticut Democrat Chris Dodd says the economy, though, still needs help.
At a time when we could make such a difference, where falling back into a recession again could happen very easily.
Congressional Democrats in the White House are eyeing the funds to power a new jobs bill. At the U.S. Senate, Mike Makowicz, Fox News Radio.
Less than a month away from the new NASCAR season, one top racing team is mixing Daytona 500 prep with earthquake relief.
NASCAR team owner Rick Hendricks stepping up help for Haiti, adding a second plane to the assistance he's sending through an organization making mission flights there. 10 crew members and 2 planes the Hendrick Aviation team has committed, flying in supplies as well as search and rescue personnel, and on one return trip bringing back orphans who'd been adopted by American families. Hendrick, a cancer survivor who also lost several family members and employees in a 2004 plane crash, says he knows what it's like to feel helpless and that he's proud of the work his people are doing. Lillian Wu, Fox News Radio.
Football fans getting fired up. A rally for the Jets in Times Square, counting down to this Sunday's battle with the Colts for the AFC Championship and a trip to the Super Bowl. The Vikings and the Saints play for the NFC title. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Joined us tonight. My name is Eric Altman, sitting in tonight for the injured Todd Bates, and with me is his co-host and my co-host tonight, the incomparable Joel Sturgis. Joel, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing good. I don't know quite if you can call me incomparable or not, but we are kicking off the second hour here, and you had some great stuff you want to talk to John a little bit about, and that is his state, his great state of Ohio.
Yeah, we were talking before the break about Athens, Ohio, and we just touched base on, you know, some of the things that are going on there. The university's haunted. They've got the haunted asylum there. The whole town is basically one, it seems like one giant haunted location. And I understand that the town was actually featured a few years ago on a national television program, Scariest Places in the World, I believe it was. And tell us about the university there, some of the hauntings that go on at that university. That really intrigued me.
Yeah, there's a lot of strange things going on there. And I have to say, I hate to burst bubbles, but, you know, some of the university stuff has certainly become kind of urban legend, you know. But there's enough of the real stuff there, and I think probably the biggest thing is the Athens Mental Asylum, which actually now is part of Ohio University. The building was built, I think, like 1872, and it's a beautiful building. It stands on a ridge right above the river, so it's sort of like a high point of town. You look out, you know, and you see these sort of Gothic towers up above the river on a hill. It's a beautiful, beautiful building. But there's a lot of things that are going on in there. And that's the place where at Halloween all the time, throughout the year, but mostly at Halloween, a lot of the students try to break into this place because, you know, they want to experience ghosts. And most of the buildings are actually shut down and locked up because they're in bad shape. You know, they're from the 1880s, 1870, and they're in tough shape, and the university has not been able to afford to remodel them yet. But I did an investigation with a group there from Columbus, and we just sort of a basically top-to-bottom investigation. We went through all the wards that were locked. We got the good graces of one of the maintenance men there who, had keys and let us in, you know. But we did an investigation, and we went up and down with cameras. We had some stationary cameras positioned in different areas of the building. We carried a lot of other cameras with us. We did the same thing with recorders. We had digital recorders placed in different areas, and we carried some with us. And we just went up and down. We went from the basement all the way up through these various wards to the top of the building. And One thing we did was replace recorders in different areas. And when we got back after being there, probably about 7 hours or so, from around maybe 9 o'clock at night through maybe like 3 in the morning or something, we went back and we analyzed all the footage we had and the recordings. And as you know, that takes hours and hours to do. And it's kind of the boring part of ghost hunting that people don't really talk about, is going through all this stuff. But we were sitting there listening to one of the digital recorders that we had. And this one we had placed in a basement room. And this room, well, the basement was where the institution would basically put the patients who were in danger of harming themselves or others. They were the violent patients that didn't respond to therapy or medication. Basically, they locked them up. I mean, this was like your padded cell, your typical padded cell. A horrible thing, but, you know, in those days, there was nothing else to do with these people. So we had a recorder in one of those rooms, and we left, you know, closed the door and let it go. Well, as you're listening to the tape, we're listening, and we don't hear anything. We're just sitting there listening. We're half asleep because we've been doing this for a long time now, and we're just kind of hearing white noise, you know, kind of... You know, nothing else, right? And then all of a sudden, in the middle of all that, we hear, "Would you help us?"
Whoa. Like that. That'd be freaky. I would have said, no, I'm not. See you guys. Have fun.
I got to tell you, I mean, the hair stand, you know, the back of my neck, it just stood straight up because it was so clear, and it was that kind of a whisper, you know, "Would you help us?" And when you consider where that recorder was placed, it makes a lot of sense that you'd get that kind of an EVP, you know, "Would you help us?" Because, yes, of course, these people wanted help. They wanted to be out. They wanted to be healthy and wanted to be there, you know. Even now as I'm talking about it, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it because it was so clear. And I've heard a lot of EVPs, and people will say, "Oh, did you hear that? You know, it said whatever." And I go, "No, I didn't hear really anything." "No, listen carefully, listen carefully." And you listen and you listen and you just don't hear it. But this was clear as a bell. It was just like, you know, "Would you help us?" And we checked and made sure there was nobody else down there or anything else. So that came out of that investigation. And other people have seen, they've seen apparitions in that building. One of the floors is used by the art instructors at Ohio University. They have their own private studios in there. So they have access 24/7 to the building. And frequently they're in there at night, you know, midnight or whatever, because they teach in classes during the day. So the only time they have to work is at night. So they'll be up there, and sometimes maybe up there by themselves or maybe two of them. And they always talk about hearing footsteps, you know, seeing kind of like shadows go by their door of their studio, and they'll get up and look and there's nobody there. A friend of mine was an art instructor, and he had a studio there, and he told me that, you know, one night he was working in there, and he got up, he wanted to use the men's room, and, you know, he walked down the hall to the men's room. Now, the men's room, it's a rectangular room, and it has one door only at one far end. So when you enter that door, if you just stop in the doorway and look straight in, you're looking at the opposite wall, which has a line of mirrors and a line of sinks. So if you're standing there looking, you can see in the reflected mirror anybody else that's in that room. So he walked in, and of course, the first thing he sees is himself. Then he notices another man, like down a couple of mirrors or whatever, standing there. He saw the reflection of a guy wearing a coat and a hat. Now, he didn't think too much of that. He kind of was startled a little bit, but then he thought, well, who knows? Maybe it's a friend of one of the other artists or something else like that. So he turns to go into the men's room, and when he turns, there's nobody else there. And he was not wearing a coat. He was not wearing a hat. And he was also standing in the only doorway in and out of that building. So whatever he saw literally disappeared as soon as he turned around. So there's those kinds of things going on there in that building. And I'm convinced that that is a really great place for ghost hunting.
Wow. Do you ever have a Scooby-Doo moment and just get out of there?
I've probably had a lot of Scooby-Doo moments. I don't know.
It's like, well, you know what? Let's get out of here, guys.
That's about what you feel like, you know, sometimes. But, you know, what happens a lot of times when I told that first story about the recording is that, you know, a lot of times you're in the presence of something paranormal and you're not even aware of it. You're not aware of it until you get back and you look at your your photos or your video recordings and you go, wow, look at that. You know, we didn't see that. We didn't notice that. Or you hear it. You get an EVP. And, of course, an EVP you don't hear until, you know, you play it back later on. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of the strange thing about this, is you could be right in the middle of something and not necessarily aware of it, unless you're the kind of person that is, you know, sensitive to these things. If you're a medium or a psychic or a clairvoyant or clairaudient or clairsentient or whatever. And I'm none of those things.
Yeah, me neither.
So, I'm just a guy.
You know? Yeah, I'm just some guy out there talking to myself.
I'm just a guy talking to myself.
Yeah, really. No, how do you feel, though, about people that might be in a haunted location and they say, go to the light, go to the light? How do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, I look at that two ways. I mean, to me, this isn't, well, how should I say it? I think ghost hunting, and I even hate the term ghost hunting. You know, they're not animals. You're not out with a rifle and a bag and a game bag to, you know, take them back and hang them over your mantelpiece.
Yeah, it sounds like Billy Bob. Sounds like Billy Bob and his buddy going out there and saying, "Hey, Billy Bob, grab the Schlitz and a shotgun. Let's go get us a ghost." That's what I think of every time. You know, it's like, oh.
Yeah, you don't stuff them and mount them over your fireplace. You know. But having said that, I mean, that's the term everybody uses, so we're kind of stuck with that. But I don't like it because it indicates to me something that is different than the reality, which is that ghosts are, or let's say at least were, people like you and me. I mean, they had lives. They had real human lives. They lived, they died, they loved, they worked, you know, whatever. And for us to go across the, you know, bring across the idea of hunting, it's pretty bizarre. You don't hunt your neighbor, you know. Well, it depends on your neighbor.
But, it depends on the neighbor.
My neighborhood. But barring that, you know. No, so I guess I'm saying is I think that, you know, we need to have a little respect, you know, for that and not even think in terms of you know, hunting like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. You almost find it. Do you run into a lot of disrespectful, well, I'm going to use the phrase again, ghost hunters out there in the field? Have you ran into your fair share of those?
Well, I luckily I haven't too much. I mean, a little bit, but not much. But I certainly have heard stories about, you know, particular groups or particular individuals that have an approach that I wouldn't recommend or I wouldn't use. And sometimes you see it on some of the television programs. Of course, that's a whole other issue. But you know, to your point about going to the light and all that's where I was starting to go with that. And I said that, to me, if you're the kind of person that can make contact with a ghost, you know, like I said, a sensitive, a medium, a psychic, whatever, and if you can understand that ghost is somebody who is trapped, lost, however you want to phrase it, they're clearly in a place where they're not supposed to be. They're not supposed to be here anymore. They're supposed to be somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So if that person perceives that spirit is looking for that kind of help, I think it's an obligation for that person to try to help them if they can, if they can make that kind of assistance. And I have worked with some mediums and psychics on different investigations who have done just that. And, I trust that they're doing that. Mm-hmm. In other words, I don't think that we should consider them to be ghosts, to be like animals in a zoo that visit every so often,
exactly.
Maybe poke a stick at, you know?
Exactly. And we have a caller there, John. Hello, caller. You're on Airstrike Radio Live with myself, Joel Sturgis, Eric Altman, and, of course, our incomparable guest tonight, John Kachuba.
Hi, it's Nellie.
Hey, Nellie, how you doing?
Okay, how about you?
Oh, I can't complain.
You have a great guest on tonight.
Doesn't he rock?
Yes, he does. I actually got to meet him in person this summer, and that's what I'm calling about.
You lucky dog.
Nellie from Florida?
Yeah, Nellie from Florida. From Columbus. The Kelton House?
Yes, okay. The Kelton House.
Yeah, I was just wondering what you thought of it.
I didn't get the question.
Do you have a specific question for him, Nellie?
I was wondering how well he liked the Kelton House when he came back this summer.
Okay. It was great, Nellie, and it's going to definitely be in the new book. Cool. For the audience, Nellie works at the Kelton House in Columbus, which is a great old, 1860s, maybe a little bit earlier house. Nellie can tell us, but a beautiful house right in some of the old section of Columbus, and it's furnished in old period antiques, and you can take a tour through there. The docents there are well-educated, and they know the history of the place. And the house is loaded with ghosts. I mean, the stories I heard there were incredible. And Nellie, yes, it's definitely going to be in the new book that I was talking about a little bit earlier, the second Ohio book that will be coming out next year. We'll definitely have the Kelton House in there.
Cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah, we had a good time.
I had a good time, and
yeah, we had a good time with the ghost tours this year. The doll flipped over twice during the tours, so it's getting to be a running joke with them.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's always fun when you have a running joke. That's right, because it gets tired quickly. Ha! Ah, no, never mind. Nellie, I want to thank you a ton for calling in.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Absolutely.
Take care, Nellie. Thank you. Nellie was great. I had a little hard time hearing. I don't know if the connection is, you know, that good.
Yeah,
enough,
little,
a
little bit fuzzy.
Anyway, what I was going to say was that Nellie was very gracious in showing me around the place, and the docents there were wonderful. And the nice thing about it is that if you go to the Kelton House in Columbus, it's one of these places where, you know, they will talk to you about ghosts. I've been to a lot of places that were haunted, and, you know, you might ask, like, the volunteers there or supervisors on the site or whatever to tell you about it, and they don't, you know, they clam up. Especially, I noticed that to be true on a lot of places that are listed with the national parks, you know, federal kind of places. The feds don't want to talk to you about that. they don't want to know about ghosts, you know. So that was a nice thing about Kelton House, is that anybody you talk to say, oh, yeah, let me tell you about what happened to us last week. You know?
Well,
so cool.
You meet so many people, you must run into a point where, you know, oh, John, I met you so-and-so place, and this is Frank or Ted or Bill. And you ever find yourself at a loss where you're like, and you want to remember everybody. You really do. And you ever sit there and say, yeah, I know you. And you kind of cover your own tracks. I do that all the time.
Sure. I deal with my children.
No, I do. Yeah, my kids. I met them one time, my kids, and that was enough for me. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Speaking about, you know, one time, we got, well, this is, well, not the one time break, but we got an awesome break with, well, we got some good bands. Like, we've been playing a lot of this independent stuff. Definitely want your feedback on whether you like these bands, whether you don't want me to ever play it again, stuff like that. And that's coming up in the next break, so give it a listen, give it a fair try, and let us all know how you feel about it.
Did I kill my husband? As the only woman in Illinois to be hung for murder, local lore has tarred me as a bad, bad woman. But there's more to the story. Find out in The Hanging of Betsy Reed by Rick Kelsheimer. I was a healer. They called me a witch and said that I poisoned the old man. 20,000 people came to see me die. I did burn down the jail and didn't even stay buried for long. But did I kill him? Rick Kelsheimer tells my story as fairly as I have ever seen it. Read The Hanging of Betsy Reed, available at Amazon.com.
Time to fight. Hello? Hi, Mildred, it's Betty. What are you up to?
Oh, just trying to find some information on ghosts. There's so many sites to choose from, I don't even know where to start.
Have I got the place for you. It's called hauntedvoices.com, and they got all the info you could ever need.
Really?
Yeah, they even have free EVP lessons. You know, like they showed in that movie with Mikey Keaton.
Oh, the spirit voices.
That's the one. And they have live chats each Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. They got special guests and everything.
What's the site again?
It's hauntedvoices.com.
Thanks, Betty. Gotta run now.
Where to?
Where do you think? To hauntedvoices.com.
Hey, ma'am, do you like Airstrike Radio?
Yes! 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 Ah! Oh! Oh, yes!
Alrighty then, I've never quite made a woman do that before, but hey, let's get right back to the show.
Hopefully you enjoyed that last bumper. That's a great one. Yes, it's definitely that kind of radio. Hopefully it's that kind of radio. At least I like to think it's that kind of radio.
I'll have what she's having.
In my heart of hearts, I know it's not. Gosh darn it. Well, anyhow, before we left, we were talking about all sorts of great things about paranormal. And really, there was a great question that was posed, Eric, and you have it. So why don't you go ahead and fire it off.
Yeah, John, Bell from the Haunted Voices Radio Network chat room asks, have you ever investigated anything in New Mexico?
Yeah, I have. First, I hope she's in New Mexico, because I want to say that New Mexico is one of my favorite states. I've traveled through that state a lot, and I love it. It's beautiful. Las Vegas, the real Las Vegas, is actually in New Mexico. That place was settled about 10 years before Las Vegas, Nevada. It's up in the northern part of the state. It's a small town. Has a very heavy Hispanic, old Hispanic population. These families have been here in that town since the Spanish land grant days, when that was actually part of Mexico. So they've been there forever. And the history up there is incredible. There's Native American and Hispanic ghosts all around the place. And I have a whole chapter in my book, Ghost Hunters, an entire chapter called The Spookiest Little Town in the Southwest. And it's about Las Vegas, New Mexico. So, I can just give you a list. In that town alone, there's the Plaza Hotel, there's United World College, there's the ruins of a place called Fort Union, an old cavalry fort that was out there. What else? The theater, University of New Mexico, has a branch campus in Las Vegas, and they have a theater there, performing arts theater, that has two or three ghosts within it alone. So, yeah, there's a lot. And I would really like to go back to New Mexico and do more, especially with Native American culture. I'm a big history buff generally, but I have a special interest in Native American culture. In fact, a lot of my fiction is Native American-based. So I'd really like to go back there and do some work with some of the people out there in the various pueblos and all, which I've been to a lot of the pueblos and a lot of the old Anasazi ruins and all that kind of stuff, and it's a wonderful place. Very spiritual. I mean, there's so many just really spiritual places in that state.
Wow. See now that is a state that you don't hear much about, and it's got such a rich history, though.
No, it's incredible.
You know, you don't hear a lot of people saying, well, over in New Mexico, there's this great... You just don't hear it like you do, let's just say, Waverly Hills or another, you know, famous haunt. And in some ways, I guess, in the pit of my gut, I want to say, you know, that's almost better than having it everywhere, because it kind of preserves what you have.
Well, it does. As I mentioned, I said Las Vegas, and I was talking about some of those families that are living there. Some of those families, their ancestors were living there before the Pilgrims, you know, came to Plymouth Rock by about 100 years. I mean, the Spanish were there in the early 1500s, you know. So, I mean, the history goes way, way back. We're so oriented when we study history in school towards the East Coast and the English colonies and all that, that we forget that about 100 years before the English settled there, the Spanish were already in this country in the western part of it, you know.
Well, before... So, before I forget to say this, there's a comment saying, John, you have an open invitation to go to Las Cruces. It's also haunted.
I do?
You do? From Bell in the chat room says, yeah, invite John on down. We'll take him around down there and show him the sights.
I have a good friend in Las Cruces, so I'd love to go there. I've never been there, actually. It's probably the one town in New Mexico I haven't been in.
Really? I was never there, but I'd like to go, kind of thing. Now, have you ever gone across the pond over to Europe?
I have. I did some. Actually, I was in. this is kind of weird, but I was in Malta for about 6 weeks the year before last, and everybody says Malta. I've heard of it, I think, but I'm not sure. Tiny little island, not much bigger, literally, than Central Park in New York, and it's in the Mediterranean, about 60 miles south of Sicily, a British colony for a long time, now independent. They have got an incredible history there. They have these old stone temples that are the oldest known man-made, stone temples in the world.
Sure.
And they've got that. They have something that is called the Hypogeum, and it's an underground, this is incredible, it's basically a necropolis. It's an underground city, if you will, where they buried thousands and thousands of their dead, the ancient culture that was there. Mm-hmm. And you can go down there, you can visit this place. They limit the times. They only allow so many people a day down there and in very small groups because they're trying to preserve it. But you go down there and you go down these stairs and you're basically going through these tunnels underground that are carved through solid rock. And there's like little openings and little alcoves and like little altars. And it's just, it's incredible. So that culture goes way back. And there are, I got a lot of ghost stories from Malta relative to, Malta was owned for a long time by knights of Malta, basically. And they were attacked by the Turks back and forth for centuries. And a lot of bloodshed, a lot of carnage. And there are a lot of ghosts there of these old knights as well as of these Turks. So it's a great place. So I've done some work there. I'm going to be doing some work in Asia in March.
Wow, you're kind of globe hopping right now, aren't you, John?
Yeah. In March, I'm going to Singapore, Vietnam, and Cambodia.
Wow.
And I'm going to be checking out some places there.
Your frequent flyer miles must be just ungodly by now. That's cool. That's really cool. You're going to places that people only dream of going. And speaking of a dream, hey, we have a caller.
Wow.
I couldn't find a good way to segue in you there, caller. Right, just okay. Joking with you. You're live right there with John Kachuba right on Airstrike Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. It's another beautiful Thursday night, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? It's about 55 here.
How you doing? How you doing? You doing good?
I am great.
Stay not trouble?
Belle.
Belle, are you stay not trouble?
Not me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, after all, I have to be inciting something.
Well, you know what? It would be boring if you didn't.
That's right.
That's right. Got to keep life interesting. But did you have a question for John?
Well, actually, you had asked for a ghost story or two, and John having a friend in Las Cruces, be sure to visit the Double Eagle. It's very haunted.
Okay. What is the story behind it?
Well, the Double Eagle is a watering hole in Mesilla. It's old Mesilla. Old Mesilla existed before Las Cruces, and now is a part of Las Cruces, really. And everybody from Pat Garrett to Billy the Kid has been in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
I have seen a couple of ghosts there myself.
Really?
I was taking lunch and during the broad daylight, no less. And I was having lunch with a couple of other ladies. And we were on the veranda. And I glanced into the ballroom. It happened to be open. And I thought, oh, how quaint. They're doing a a recreation of that time. And they have girls in ballroom dresses and, saloon girl sorts of things, and cowboys and all that. And I thought, how neat. And I looked down and took a bite of food and looked back. There was nothing. It was dark in there.
Wow.
Yeah, and the dining area was full. So how I saw that, I don't know.
You mean nobody else saw it? Just you.
Nobody else noticed it. I saw it.
Well, that's...
I'm very, very psychic.
Really?
I would think, yeah.
Really? Can you give me the lotto numbers?
I can't. Have you ever heard of a rich witch?
I know, but see, why is it every psychic, though? No offense here. No offense to you at all. But why is it every psychic I've ever talked to can never give me the lotto numbers? That's all I want. I could retire.
You could.
I could. I could, but...
It must not be in our cards.
It must not be, but then again, who'd host Airstrike?
That's true.
You know.
Me.
That's very good.
Our universal need to be where we're at overcomes our want for money.
You know what? That is a great point. That's right. You're in the right place, right where you need to be at that certain time. The universe doesn't mess up. It knows what it's doing.
I believe that very strongly.
Hey, you know
now
what?
I have one more.
Oh, go right ahead. Absolutely.
There is a small town called Oregon. O-R-G-A-N is named for the mountains because the mountains have, they look like an organ to whoever happened to name them. Okay, mm-hmm. Like an old pipe organ.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, in Oregon, there is a mercantile. There's a couple of little stores that have been restored. And I went in there, and my in-laws had invited me to a nice steak dinner. It's an excellent place to eat. And I walked in and said, oh, look at the bar, and look at this, and all this other stuff where things were. And they weren't.
Wow.
But that was the last place that Pat Garrett apparently had stopped off before he was shot.
Yeah, wow.
Really? So, good old Pat Garrett got shot there.
Yeah, I didn't know that when I first walked into this place. I wasn't shot there, but that was his last stop before he went out onto the road and got shot. He was ambushed.
Really? I did not know that. You learn something new every day. I want to thank you, though, so very much for calling and adding to this great show.
You're welcome.
You rock. Totally rock.
And yeah.
You definitely come down and see Las Cruces.
Can I come, too?
Thanks for the tips.
Can I come with them?
Absolutely.
All right. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. The dog will move over.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great night.
All righty.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much.
But, we what do you feel, John? We're going to jump into psychics here really quickly. What do you feel about psychics? Do you feel that they're a real deal or, that kind of stuff?
Funny you should ask. Because I just had a session with a psychic last week in Casa Vega, Florida. I paid $100 and sat for an hour with a psychic. I'm working on another book. I'm always working on books, but I'm working on a book about psychics and mediums. And what I'm going to do is every month this year, I'm going to go to a different psychic or medium once a month, a different person, and I'm going to have a particular question in mind, and I'm going to talk to them and make notes about what they say, and I'm going to follow that month and see how it goes and see how accurate they are and see if there's any insights. You know what I think that. There's two different kinds of psychics. The ones I'm talking about now is just if you go because you want to find out something about your life or you have a question that you need answered. And I think that the good ones are not much different than a good psychologist or a good psychiatrist. I think they're adept at reading body language and sort of getting at what you're which are concerned about and trying to find answers for you. Mm-hmm. There are some, certainly, that are fakes, like every other profession, but you know, I think most of them are sincere, and you maybe get something out of it, maybe you don't. It depends on how you want to interpret it.
But have you noticed the current trend where it's almost, you're almost, if this is even a word now, correct me if I'm wrong, more special. I know it's not a word, I just can't think of anything better. More special if you're
specialer.
Not... specialer. There you go, that's better.
There you go,
that rocks right there. If you're not a psychic, because I'm, and lately, I got to say, I've seen just the outcropping of them.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say to that, because, I mean, there are some that are good, there are some that aren't so good, there are some that are completely, you know, fraudulent. There's others that are completely sincere. They run the gamut. But I've also worked with some on investigations, too, though, which is a little bit different than just going to somebody for advice, you know. And I have found sometimes that they can help an investigation because they can zero in a little bit for you. They can do some of the legwork, in a sense, for you when you come into a big place or any place, because they might be able to sense that, okay, this is the room that you really need to concentrate in, because I'm getting something here. Or, you know, I'm picking up on a male or a female or a child or something like that. So they can sometimes do some of the legwork for you and make your investigation maybe a little bit easier. And I've had that happen on some investigations. But I've also been on ones where we've had psychics or mediums that, you know, have made pronouncements that I kind of look at them like, oh, yeah, I could have said the same thing, you know. I don't know. There's good ones and bad ones. It's like everything else.
Well, how do you... Okay. How do you verify... I just want to word this correctly, but how... Well, I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm not going to be Mr. Shakespeare here. How do you verify that they're not BSing you?
Yeah, well, that's the question, isn't it? And I don't think there really is any way you can do it until after the fact. I mean, if you take one with you on an investigation, and if totally uncoached or unrehearsed or anything else like that, if they walk in and they say, oh, you know, I sense an elderly man here, and he's saying that he died of a heart attack in this right in front of the fireplace. Well, if later on you do research on the house and do histories and everything else like you should do, and you find out that, yeah, sure enough, there was an owner in 1950 that was in his 70s and dropped dead of a heart attack in front of the fireplace, you got to say, wow, you know, that psychic hit it. You know, how do they know that? That's pretty specific information, and I think for me, that's what works. Now, when you're in the house at that time or at that location at the time, of course, you don't know. The person just says, well, I sense this, and you kind of say, well, okay. Because you have no way of verifying
it. I sense you're full of crap. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, right? I mean, I say I'm not as sensitive, and I'm not. I'm not a psychic. But I can walk into a house and just say, oh, I sense somebody here, you know, and there was a little girl, and she fell down the stairs. Well, you know, who's going to say that I'm right or wrong? How could you possibly know?
Or, yeah, you could turn to him and say, I'm sensing. Oh, the spirit guides are telling me, you're fake.
Well, you know, I mean, there's no way of knowing unless you are able to verify it through a history or something else later on.
I have met in all the years I've been doing radio and in the paranormal and done this and done that, I've met very few that cut the mustard, though.
Yeah.
That are real. I mean, if I had to put a percentage on it, it's less than, well, I'd have to say it's 99% fake, 1% real.
Wow.
Now, not fake, not knowing they're fake. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying these people are out there being malicious. I'm not saying they're out there being mean.
Right.
I think that they think they have an ability better than what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that you'll feel that way, and that's fine if they do. And if people want to believe them because their heart is in the right place.
Right.
But, I am such a cynic when it comes to psychics. I mean, I basically, you know, I have this principle when I'm on radio with one. I say, well, I don't care if you proved it to the guy down the street. You prove it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You prove it to me. You prove it to me right now on this radio show. you know, if you're really as good as you are, you know, that kind of thing. And it works sometimes, and other times it fails miserably. And it's just a different way, like what you're doing, different way of testing them. I commend you for going out there and doing that work, going to these different psychics, testing them out, stuff like that. I think it's great. I think it's needed. And I think, John, it's totally awesome you to do that, because in some respects, in some circles, you're putting your name on the line when you do that.
Well, yeah, I know. And what I'm trying to do, I mean, so many people are seeking advice from psychics. I mean, let's even forget for a minute using them in ghost investigations or paranormal investigations. But so many people rely on psychics for advice, and, you know, it's fine, I think, to kind of just say, oh, I'm curious about what this guy says, and maybe you take it, maybe you don't. But if you seriously take the advice of other people like that, who may be, and I say maybe, you know, conning you
allegedly
for a buck, or yeah, or if not, if even not that, like you say, maybe somebody who has the best interest in heart at heart, and have good intentions, but maybe really don't have those abilities, you can get some bad advice. And if you're the kind of person that is going to rely completely on them instead of your own judgment, you could be in trouble. And with this book, I'm not really trying to, I'm not looking to debunk them and say, aha, they're all fakes. I'm not trying to prove that. I'm just curious. I'm curious as to why so many people go to them in the first place. And so I'm curious as to how they work, how they operate, what they say, you know, just everything about them. And at the end of the year, I'll have had, you know, 12 visits with 12 different people from all across the country. In fact, all around the world. I'm going to do some of this when I travel, you know, to Asia next month, or in March rather. So I'm going to be doing it everywhere. And at the end of the year, I'll have kind of a collection of stories from 12 different psychics, and I'll let you know how it, you know, how it works out. But it's the same approach I take in my ghost books, though, which is that I'm open-minded. I don't like to go in with an agenda on anything, trying to prove or disprove. I just go in and say, show me what's going on.
Show me the money. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's right. The best way to do it. I mean, you know, put your proverbial money where your mouth is. Yeah, I mean, kind of thing, and that's really what you're doing. I mean, you know, and I, like I said, I commend you. What do you think, Eric? Eric, how do you feel on psychics and that whole nine yards?
I'm like you. I'm kind of skeptical on the whole psychic thing. I have yet to meet a psychic that's really proven to me that they are truly gifted. I think a lot of the psychics, and I don't know a lot of psychics personally, but from what I see and hear, a lot of the psychics tend to really feed off of information that's provided to them by the people they're giving readings to. What would really convince me is if you took a psychic into a haunted location or into a reading, and that person they were reading or that location they were going into, no information at all was given to that psychic, and they were able to give factual information about that person or about that location. That would really prove something to me, but I have yet to see that happen.
Right, and that's what I agree with Eric. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If you can take somebody like that into a location and they say something, they have a story that has, you know, even specifics, like an elderly man dropping dead or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then you find out later on that happened, and you can also verify that the psychic had no previous knowledge of that. Then I think, you know, you've got to say, well, how did they come to that? How did they figure that out? Well, you know, something's going on. So I don't know that I've had that experience yet either. I mean, I'm looking back on it, and I'm not sure that I've had a psychic on an investigation that has been that specific with information that we could then verify and say, wow, you know, they really hit it. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, why don't they go ahead and they get a house where they have documented court records, a whole nine yards? I mean, you know, that's kind of sealed, not really well known. Take them into this house with all those records that you know they don't, obviously, and see how accurate they really are. You know, that might you know, really another way to go about it. It's kind of like, you know, I don't like to call it ambush testing, but that's really what it would be, you know,
right.
Kind of ambushing them a little bit. But there again, I have to say, if they're out there publicly, I'm not talking about grandma that thinks she has some ability. I'm not talking about somebody that doesn't do for money. I'm talking about these people that are out there charging money for these psychic readings.
Right.
They deserve to have that done because they're out there publicly, and as a public figure, you have to expect it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get my
soapbox. I think too, that if you can get a psychic medium involved in an investigation, that they are accurate and they do have that gift and ability, and you're able to document that with the electronic equipment that you're using, I think that really helps validate a location being haunted.
Well, I think that's true too. Yeah, that's sort of the converse, right? But I think you're right that if they had that ability and it can be documented, then yeah, sure, it gives more credence to the idea of the place being haunted to begin with, I would think. Yeah.
Well, boy, oh boy, I just stopped to think there to say, wow, you know, the psychic thing, though, is really a deep subject. That's a whole show on its own.
Well, that's why it's going to be a book.
Exactly, exactly. We'll have to have you back on just to talk about this specific subject matter when the new book comes out, and we can kind of talk about it a little bit more in depth. But there's a couple definitions out there that have been thrown around that I'd like you to clear up. Now, this has been posed to me. A lot of people are using the term matrixing when it comes to photos. Is the proper term pareidolia? And if so, what is the definition of pareidolia?
Huh. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll be honest. I didn't know that until I heard you talking about it in the break there. So you're saying a pareidolia is the idea of being able to see sort of images that aren't there. In other words,
like a face in the wallpaper.
Yeah, sure. Like the Madonna in your grilled cheese sandwich.
Exactly.
Elvis in peanut butter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Bert and Ernie on the
side
skyscraper.
Of the refrigerator.
That's right.
How are you doing?
Well, okay. Exactly. It's like the wood grain. You see a demon in the wood grain, like on that one TV show. Oh, do you see it? You see it? No, that is pareidolia. You are seeing it only because someone pointed it out to you.
Right. It's perception. It's not. I mean, I don't ever take any credence in any of that stuff. And I know that Eric was talking a little bit earlier about the thing at Ohio University that was on was in a TV program, and it's written about, you know, the face of the devil on the door and everything else like that. Well, you're looking at wood grain. I mean, you're not looking at the devil, you know. It's not, mm-hmm. You know, the devil's not just sticking his face on that door and just leaving it there and saying, hey, here's my face, take a look, and I'll come back for it later. Mm-hmm. No, you know, it's not happening. It's all perception. And
Sure.
Yeah.
It's perception over substance at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I was with my parents live in Florida, so I spent a fair amount of time going down there to see them. And there was a kind of a big office building. I don't know if it was Orlando or someplace, but something had happened. It had all this like kind of blue glass tinted windows, you know. And there was some warpage or something in one of them. And next thing you know, there's people on their knees on the lawn saying, "Oh, look, it's the Virgin Mary." And my gosh, this was going on for like months. I'm thinking, no, it's a warped window that needs to be replaced. You know? Well, I mean, the building had been there for years with no Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you know, I mean, I have trouble with that because to me that's just wishful thinking, I think, that you're, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, like. Sure. And touching back on the psychic thing one more time, we have a comment coming in from one of the chat rooms. To verify a psychic, the most effective way to do so is to a bona fide one, of course, would be to have them tell you events before they happen, and then they happen, of course. Would that be the most effective way?
Yeah, but you know, the psychics that I've met will tell you that they're not fortune tellers necessarily. You know, they really, and the ones I've met have said that I really can't see into the future and predict events, but I could put you in touch or communicate with the other side, with spirits or whatever.
So they really fall more into that medium category rather than psychic.
Well, that's what I think. I mean, there's all different definitions, you know. And there were people, and there, I think there still are people that call themselves, you know, fortune tellers. And you think of the old gypsy image, you know, with the crystal ball and the kerchief around the head, and you know, the bangly bracelets and all that kind of stuff, right?
But
I mean, those people would say, you know, I see your future. You know?
I see it coming.
Do you like that? Is that that radio voice? I see your future.
That's right. Do not cross the street on December 23rd.
But, you know, I mean, a good friend of mine is a spiritualist minister, and with a capital S, a spiritualist church. And the spiritualist church, you know, for them, talking to spirit, as they say, is part of their religion, and they learn how to do it. They do it after every Sunday service. Somebody gets up on the platform, they call it, and basically talks to spirit and has messages for people. Well, my friend would say to me that, yes, I can talk to spirit. I can talk to maybe, you know, somebody. If you want me to talk to your great-grandfather, I can try to connect with him and get a message from him or whatever. But if I asked you to tell me my future, you know, what's going to happen to me, whatever, she'd say, well, I don't have that information. I don't know it. I can't tell it to you. Mm-hmm. Because what she would say is that as a medium, she's only the medium. Think about that. The medium is in between. I mean, she is only the conduit between the spirit and you. She doesn't interpret the message. She doesn't necessarily know what it means.
She's the go-between. Yeah, absolutely.
She's the go-between, exactly. She's the relayer of a message.
Yeah, we only got about 3 minutes left of the show there, John. I'd like for you to go ahead and plug yourself, tell everyone where they can find you, where they can see you next. Oh, yeah, I know. We could talk about this all night.
What?
Where'd this time go?
I would say that my website is probably the easiest way, and it's www.johnkachuba.com, JohnKachuba.com. All my books are up there, my tour schedules up there, other kinds of information. And then, you know, my books are available anywhere. They're in all the bookstores like Barnes & Noble and Borders and things like that, and they're all on Amazon and other online vendors. So just a little Google search on my name, and there'll be plenty of stuff.
Good deal, good deal. Anything to add before we close the show? Anything that you'd like to impart any wisdom to the audience?
I don't have any wisdom.
Come on, you're the smartest guy I know, dang near.
No wisdom at all. But no, it's been fun talking to you guys. It's been, Joel, we've talked a few times before. It's been fun. And Eric, I've enjoyed talking to you. And I'd be happy to come back and talk about other books too.
Definitely, yeah. We'd like to, next time you come back, we discussed you maybe touching on your other great works where you've co-authored actually with your lovely wife.
Sure.
You know, those great books like Why Is This Job Killing Me, which I recommend everybody picking that one up as well. While you're buying the Ghost Hunter book, grab that one too.
Grab them all.
That's right. That's right. Because John needs to feed the kids.
There's six out there. Grab them all.
There you go. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And until next time, guys, next time, don't miss Tuesday. We're having the world-renowned rock and roll myths and legends expert himself, our Gary Patterson. Gary is, wow, he's out there. I mean, I don't mean out there in a bad way. I mean, he's on MTV, VH1. He is everywhere. He's the go-to guy when anything happens in rock and roll. And plus, he's going to answer the pesky questions I've been plugging you, like, well, why is Elvis working at Denny's? All that kind of good stuff. So until next time, guys, have a good one.
We are controlling transmission. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound. You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Sit quietly and we will control all that in here. You are about to participate in a great adventure.